Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Andrew, tell me a little bit of what the National Review thought of Mary Poppins Returns.
Mary Poppins Returns rectifies dated gender notions by making the nanny inhumanly asexual, but enlightened. That's a good one. That's a good quote. Let's see what else we got. Mary Poppins Returns hits rock bottom when Mary visits her cousin Topsy, paid by Meryl Streep doing a Russian accent. The political overtones of Streep's show-offy turn, everything is supposedly upside down in the era of Orange Man Bad, suggest that Trump derangement syndrome has damaged liberal show business.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater. It feels like we haven't talked about Mary Poppins in a good long time. Let's talk about her again.
Mary Poppins? Who's that?
I hear she's like Manny McPhee, except hotter.
Oh, much hotter, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So, today we're talking about the sequel to Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins Returns.
Is this the sixth movie in the franchise?
I don't know. I feel like I lost count after they stopped numbering them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, there is Mary Poppins, Mary Poppins 2, Mary Poppins 3, Season of the Witch, Mary Poppins 4, The Curse of Mary Poppins, Mary Poppins...
Don't forget about MP2O.
And then Rob Zombie stepped in with Mary, just Mary...
Yeah, this is the sequel to the Rob Zombie one, right? This is Mary Poppins Returns?
No, this is just a remake. It's a sequel to the original Mary Poppins, but it's skipping all the other sequels.
Oh, it's ignoring the rest of the sequels.
It's ignoring all the other sequels.
Fair enough.
Believe it or not, this film reminded me quite a bit of that new Halloween film. Like, if it reminded me of anything, it reminded me of that. Mary Poppins Returns is a 2018 American musical fantasy directed by Rob Marshall with a screenplay by David McGee and a story by McGee, Marshall, and John DeLuca. Based on the series of books by P.L. Travers, the film is a sequel to the 1964 film Mary Poppins and stars Emily Blunt as Mary Poppins, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Ben Whishaw, Emily Mortimer, Julie Walters, Dick Van Dyke, Angela Lansbury, Colin Firth, Meryl Streep, and it's set in 1930s London, 25 years after the events of the original film. It sees Mary Poppins, the former nanny of Jane and Michael Banks, returning after a family tragedy.
Why did they decide to make a sequel this long afterwards?
Because I think a few years ago they released Saving Mr. Banks, which did pretty well, like, both critically and financially. And they realized, hey, there is still a place for Mary Poppins in the general zeitgeist.
Here, you know what I was thinking of, too? Do you remember Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Yeah.
When they do the Mary Poppins gag?
Yeah.
Do you think that was almost like them trying to plant the seed, like, Mary Poppins? Mary Poppins exists. Remember Mary Poppins?
It might have been, but it also might have just been James Gunn trying to tell a joke, which tends to get him in trouble nowadays.
Yeah. He probably, that's probably part of the reason he got banned from Disney. Is he brought up Mary Poppins too early for the ad cycle?
But the film has done well. It's grossed over $200 million worldwide and received generally positive reviews from critics.
I literally watched this about 2 hours ago. You know what? It's okay.
That is much more positive than I am, sadly enough. I'm going to be the negative Nelly on this episode.
Okay. Few things that we should probably say, like, if you haven't seen this and you don't want spoilers, don't listen to this.
Yeah, we're gonna spoil it because we have opinions throughout it, so if you really, really are wanting to see it and you haven't seen it yet, just go out and see it.
Yeah, don't listen to our show first because we are going to spoil everything, pretty much, because we have a lot to say on it. Mm-hmm.
Halfway through, Colin Firth has an abortion and it's really dark.
You know what? This is going to be a lot easier than our last episode, I'll say that.
Yeah, because we were a little bit scatterbrained in the last episode since the first Mary Poppins film doesn't have a plot. It's just a bunch of fragmented events leading to a climax. This one very much has a plot.
Yes. So in this one, it's basically following the two child leads from the first movie.
As adults.
That are grown up as adults. Their parents are dead. Rip. And
they're up with Connor Murphy in the sky.
They're still living in the same house, though. Well, at least one of them is. Michael's still living in the same house, and I think Jane moved out.
Yeah, she went to a, like, bachelor pad.
A flat. She's got a flat. Mm-hmm. So Michael owns the house, but he had to take out... they say a loan, is it a mortgage?
I think he had to get, like, another mortgage on the house because his wife started dying of cancer. Which I didn't want to know that cancer still exists in the Mary Poppins world.
Yeah, and it's like... we'll get back into that, but that whole thing is just, like, sad, and it's like...
The only way you die in Mary Poppins is dying laughing.
Yes. And you have to be at least a mild antagonist to do so.
And, like, 900 years old. Those are the criteria for being dead in Mary Poppins' universe.
Okay, but yeah, he took out a loan, and he can't pay it back, so he has, like, a certain amount of time. It's a ticking clock kind of plot. Like, you gotta get... Got to get the money.
By midnight on this day. Midnight is the very important part.
Yes, midnight is exceptionally important, especially later
Practically
on.
Practically important in every way. The thing is, it's not Mary Poppins coming in and dealing with an interpersonal problem within the house like it was in the first one. It is very much dealing with a household that is relatively happy. Like, Michael is a good father. That, yeah, he's under a lot of stress, so he's probably not going to be as attentive as he usually is, but he's altogether a good father, and the kids love their dad very, very much, and he loves them, and he gives them the time that they need.
And the kids are really well put together, too. It's not like they're running off and shit. They're actually, you know, they're pretty organized and stuff like that.
The thing about this, it's kind of like the reverse message of Mary Poppins, where Mary Poppins comes in, the original, to two relatively unruly kids that are being force-fed structure by their father, who is militant and all that, and she teaches them, like, it's okay to be able to have fun while doing the things you need to. And she basically teaches the same lesson again to kids who are very well-behaved, that had to grow up too fast, not because their father forced them, but because circumstances and their mother's death force them to become much more mature really fast because of the world they live in. And she's there to teach them, hey, don't grow up too fast. In this film, at least.
Yeah. So, I said in the last episode that this, that the last one, the original Mary Poppins is the reverse of the Cat in the Hat. This is just the Cat in the Hat.
Invite a little chaos in. But in that, in the fact that she is inviting chaos into their life instead of, like, it's almost unstructured chaos, unlike in the first one where it was very structured chaos. It almost feels like she's way goofier here, a little bit too cutesy, a little too smiley, because she's trying to make the kids less serious.
I think a lot of the problems I have with this stem from that as well. Mary Poppins doesn't feel the same tonally because she is having too much fun doing everything. Whereas before she basically restrained herself to not have fun and let other people have fun, basically. I don't know.
Like, she would let everyone else goof around before she'd goof around. And in this one, she is literally the first one to goof around and put the kids basically in danger.
Yeah. It's weird. It totally... It's like they're trying so hard to get that whimsical, magic Mary Poppins feel that they're like, well, Mary Poppins, she's magic and whimsical. She has to be really smiley and fun. But that's not actually what it's like in the first movie.
And Emily Blunt, bless her heart, she is trying very hard. And I loved her in Into the Woods, where she made a lot of choices that were different that I liked. And I feel like she's trying to put her own stamp on this, but she comes off as Mary Poppins, like, at a Disney park, if that makes sense.
She's filling, the shoes she's trying to fill are too big.
Yes, and she tries very hard, and I'm not saying that she fails, it's just not quite there.
Okay, let's kind of go through the plot before we get into this kind of discussion.
All right. Describe for me the plot, just basically, step by step.
I mean, basically at the very beginning, there's just, like, chaos in the house and the lawyers. Some lawyers show up to tell Michael that he has not paid on his loan for 3 months, which you think he would know, especially since he works at the bank that he has the loan from, but I guess not.
His wife dealt with all that.
And, yeah.
And he sets up that he's an artist, so I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah, I'm willing to accept that he's a little scatterbrained. So they set up that his house is going to be repossessed in a certain amount of days if they don't repay the loan. And of course, it being the 1930s, he doesn't have the money. But they say that their father had shares in the bank that they could use to pay it off.
Mm-hmm. And so basically that's the MacGuffin. We got to get those shares to the bank, which the kid very quickly finds and sews into the old kite from the first movie.
Well, we don't find that out until the end.
But you could tell. Like, I knew right when he picked up that sheet that was the fucking shares.
I thought the shares might have already been on the kite.
No, it was very obvious. The kid picks it up, looks at the family, and it shows the camera like, it's the shares.
Hey, that's the shares. He's going to put it on the kite. Mm-hmm.
And then the kite becomes the MacGuffin. You got to take all those objects from the first movie and make them important. It's like R2-D2 in the map to Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, it's like, why does R2-D2 have that? Why is it in the kite? Why did he draw a picture on the back of the fucking really expensive piece of paper? Who knows?
Either way, the kids are sent to go get food because apparently they don't have any food. And then the youngest boy runs off to follow the kite, runs into Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's like, let me help you get that kite. And they pull it down, and Mary Poppins shows up. And I feel like it's a little bit early, isn't it?
It's early, and I think it's a weird entrance for Mary Poppins, because basically immediately she's showing that she's, like, super magical.
I mean, the kids saw that she was super magical and flew down in the first one, too.
That's true. So I guess it's not too different.
Yeah, it's not crazy different, but I don't like the fact that she already knows everyone's names.
Yeah, that was not in the first one, and I was thinking that when they were doing it.
I mean, like, if Mary Poppins had come back in between, like, when they were infants and all that, and all, but no, she's been gone this whole time, unless she's, like, just keeping an eye on her from her giant cloud in the sky.
Well, I think in this one, they really go all out with Mary Poppins is fucking a god and is all-knowing.
All-knowing perfect. And it's obvious that Jack the Lamplighter also has a history with Mary Poppins.
Yes, because he worked with Bert.
Yes, they were good friends.
Well, he is Bert.
No, he's a lamplighter, different character from a different book.
I don't care. They dress him up in the same outfit. He has the same role. He's Bert.
Yeah, but he wants to make Smexies with the daughter, with Jane.
Okay, well, the daughter didn't exist in the first movie, so...
Yeah, she did. Whatever. She was just really young.
Well, exist as a sexual object.
Well, the thing is... Okay, here's a little story about when I saw the movie in theaters.
Sure.
So it's at the animated segment, and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Emily Blunt are, like, full charm at one another. And my girlfriend just leans over and she's like, I want them to fuck. And I was like, Mary Poppins doesn't fuck anybody.
Yeah, no, that's not a thing.
I was really glad that later they give him the love interest of Jane. I'm like, oh, that fits so that we don't feel like any of that sexual tension between him and Mary.
I don't like that there's any romantic element to this at all, though.
I don't mind it. It's kept in the under, and it's kept cute. It's kept very cute and charming. I like it. It's one of the few things that I'm like, that's new, and I like it.
I don't like it.
So Mary Poppins comes in, basically is like, I demand a job, and Jane's like, oh, she must be so poor. Give her a job, Michael.
I mean, she actually is pretty poor. She doesn't have any money, does she?
I mean, I can't imagine that she does. She has a wealth outside of that. She can just go into paintings.
How does she pay for things? Where is she? Have we ever seen Mary Poppins eat? She probably doesn't need to eat.
We saw her take her medicine, which was rum punch.
I think she just did that for fun.
Yeah, for giggles. For shiggles.
All right. Next up,
Mary Poppins makes all the kids get into a bath, which is weird.
This is, so remember in the first the previous episode, we talked about the first movie, and we mentioned that all of the fantastic elements come circle back around and have a point?
Yep, I was there, I remember.
This one doesn't.
Strangely, the one thing that does circle back around in a way that I think is effective is Admiral Boom.
Admiral Boom being in this, or Admiral Boom, being not on time?
Like, him being on time, and because of what they do in the end, they make him on time. I thought that was
cute. Here's my thought, though. I'm gonna say Admiral Boom, he was on time. Big Ben was off time.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That's my opinion, too. Admiral Boom is perfect.
I don't care how old he gets, he's not off time.
It's literally Admiral his Boom, life's work.
He is never off time. Big Ben was wrong.
And then they made it right at the end, which is cute but stupid.
Yes. But basically, with this bathtub scene, though, there really isn't a point to it. It's just Mary Poppins does something magic.
To show them, it can be fun to take a bath, I guess. It's identical in message and in point to Spoonful of Sugar. It almost has the same, beat. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Spoonful of sugar, mix the medicine, go down.
With Spoonful of Sugar, though, it doesn't bring them to a different world, whereas with this one, it does. Which makes it feel more disconnected from the rest.
And I feel like Mary Poppins was very keen on the baby steps it took to, weave them into her magical development in the first one, whereas this one's just like, nope, just dive in.
Here, I'm just gonna throw you into an ocean. And then they're also floating around, and it's, weird. I don't like Mary Poppins' new hat.
The CGI isn't convincing. It looks wrong.
Can I just talk about Mary Poppins' hat? I don't like her hat. They should have kept the same hat.
The hat was the least of my issues with this film.
But they should have kept the same hat. Think about it. Remember when Bert first finds Mary Poppins in the first movie? He traces the outline of her shadow, and it's the hat, and that's how he knows that it's her. Immediately. Mm-hmm. Mary Poppins can't have a different hat.
Let me just say that Emily Blunt looks the part very well. She does her best to look like the book counterpart of Mary Poppins. She does a very good impression of what Mary Poppins should be.
Fair enough.
But Julie Andrews is Mary Poppins.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And I don't want to discredit Emily Blunt. She is trying very hard, and she is super charming, and we all love Emily Blunt.
Everyone is trying really hard in this movie.
But it's like Mary Poppins smoked 4 Marlboro packs a day for the last 20 years. I described this film to my girlfriend when I was walking out of the theater as a film that died by 1,000 cuts. 1,000 little things bother me to a point where I didn't like it anymore.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of it just comes down to they don't hit the tone properly, and it doesn't feel like a Mary Poppins movie.
It feels like a film that tries very hard to be one.
Yeah, obviously there's no other Mary Poppins sequels to compare this to, but just you compare it to the first one has this really timeless, classic whimsical feel that this one does not have.
I'll get into that more later. But either way, later that night, the children try to think about selling this bowl on their thing. What the fuck am I thinking of? It's got a word.
China.
This China bowl on their
China.
Mantle. and fight over it, and they crack it, and Mary Poppins is like, well, now we gotta fix it, and they dive into the bowl and go into the China-style bowl, and they basically reenact Jolly Holiday, except with a song that makes Jesse angry. A few songs that makes Jess angry.
I do want to just point out that, did you guys know that Disney still does two-dimensional animation?
They actually called a bunch of animators out of retirement to do this animation.
Did they really?
Yes, Rob Marshall was talking about how they did that.
Oh my god, so they don't still do it, but...
There's not a lot of animators still do this.
Yeah, it was nice to see... I think this is the first two-dimensional animation that's been in theaters in a while? Am I wrong about... I might be wrong about that.
At least in Disney. I think it's the first since Princess and the Frog. Oh, no, since Winnie the Pooh.
It's nice to see that.
And it's done well. Like, the animation and the integration with the actors. Like, there's a scene where little boy trades his actual live-action hat with a 2D anime hat.
Yeah, I thought that looked really good, yeah. There's kind of the first villains, which are kind of the same villains as...
It's played by Colin Firth, so there's an action set piece, because we all know we needed that in a Mary Poppins film, where one of the kids' stuffed animals gets kidnapped by Colin Firth Wolf, and then there's an action scene, and then the kids just wake up in bed.
Yeah, and there's, like, actual genuine villains in this movie.
And it's
which
weird.
I think is another thing that doesn't fit in Mary Poppins, because I feel like in the Mary Poppins universe, there's no bad people.
It's people, you know, that maybe have different value sets in you, but none of them are bad.
Yeah, like the closest we have to an antagonist in the first one is just someone who cares about finance.
Like really loves finance.
Yeah, but he's not like... In this movie, the guy that runs the bank is just actually evil. Like he wants to, you know... steal people's houses, essentially. Like, not give them a chance to actually pay him off, even if they actually can.
And I love Colin Firth, and I don't want to see him play bad guys.
Yeah, but he's actually evil in this, which is just... It's weird to have Mary Poppins and there's someone who's actually a bad person.
Yeah, so Michael tries to go to Colin Firth to see if he can get an extension, and he says, nope, but you got till midnight. And the kids are, like, really sad that their mom's dead, and Mary Poppins is like, well, no one's really gone, and she sings a song that means nothing, really.
They're not gone, they're just in our memories.
And I would say, bullshit, Mary Poppins, they're dead.
Mary Poppins, she is dead. Like, you know that, right?
I mean, use your magic to bring her back to life.
No. Sometimes dead is better.
So the next day, Mary Poppins decided to go and fix the bowl and take it to her cousin Topsy. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is just also there.
Yeah, he's just... I mean, he's Bert. Bert just comes along.
And he's great, and I'm happy he's there, but he's just also there.
This is basically the Uncle Albert scene.
Because Cousin Topsy, Uncle Albert, they're so original.
Except for now it's explicitly that this is Mary Poppins' cousin.
Mary Poppins shouldn't have relatives.
I mean, maybe Uncle Albert is Mary Poppins' uncle. I'm not sure.
I just thought he was everyone's collective uncle.
Yeah, but in this it's like, nope, this is explicitly her relative.
Cousin Mary.
Who's also, like, a whimsical, magic-type character. So now you have this, like, setup where Mary Poppins is getting too much backstory. Like, there's, like, a magic world, and there's a magical family members. Like, I'm expecting a Harry Potter crossover here.
Am I the only one that thinks that Meryl Streep is extremely overrated?
I've never liked her.
I've never disliked her, but she's never, like, wowed me in anything. Except for maybe Doubt. Doubt she was really good in.
No, she's fine for what she's doing. I don't like the fake Russian accent. I think it's a little goofy, but...
Well, so is Edwin's just natural voice.
Yeah, and you're also coming, like, you have, like, Dick Van Dyke's fucking British accent.
So it's hard to judge it.
Yeah, you can't complain too much about that. What I don't really like about this is that it's just yet another completely pointless scene.
You say that, but there were so many pointless scenes in the first one, too.
No, they all come back. They're not pointless. This doesn't come back. There's no part where, oh, that thing that they learned from Cousin Topsy, that's important now. That never happens. It's just, well, this scene happened.
And this is where Mary Poppins smiley, like, she's just smirking her way through this entire scene.
The original Mary Poppins from the first one would have been mad at her.
Like, get your shit together.
She would have been like, you need to fix this, and what is wrong with you?
Yeah, and it's not like Julie Andrews was a stick in the mud, but she was serious, and she wanted her...
Well, you think about the same scene in the first movie, she's not laughing it up with Uncle Albert, she's telling everyone to get down.
Yeah, I mean, she does eventually fly up there with dignity.
Yeah, but she's like, you guys need to get down from there. I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Yes, and I would never imagine Julie Andrews, Mary Poppins, actively flopping onto her head and holding yourself up with two fingers.
No, that wouldn't happen. She'd have too much dignity for that. She's like, I'm not going to justify this.
Like, everyone else would do that, and she would be fine with them doing it because they're having fun, but she would not partake in it herself.
Yeah, it's just... Tonally, it's very different, and then this scene also just doesn't serve, like, a real purpose, because really they find out the bowl wasn't worth anything anyways. They never go back to retrieve the bowl, and they don't really learn anything from this experience.
Then they go to the bank to return Michael his briefcase, and then they go annoy Colin Firth, and they piss him off, and then Michael's really pissed at Mary Poppins and the children.
Well, not really. He does apologize, like, immediately after yelling.
Well, no, he yells at them at the bank, and then they leave, and then they get lost in the fog, and they run into Lin-Manuel Miranda again.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He apologizes after this part.
Yeah, but they have to run to Lin-Manuel Miranda again so they can sing Step in Time, but with lights.
Honestly, I'm going to say the dance number, I don't like it as much as the first one.
But it's still very good. Light... It's very good.
Yeah. It is good. I'm not saying it's bad. It is still very good. It's just I don't think the light set piece is as good as the rooftop set piece.
I agree, but I think that the song itself is better than Step in Time.
I will agree, but to be honest, neither of them are like super memorable.
Mm-hmm.
They're both just kind of songs to watch a dance to.
Fair enough. And then they finally get home through the fog. Their dad yells at him, and then he immediately apologizes after they bring up dead mom. You know, play the dead mom card.
Yeah, and I think the dead mom thing is, like, something I really wish was not in this movie.
I actually like it. I'm actually going to defend it.
Really? I'm going to say I think it... I don't like it. It's there's no whimsy in dead mothers.
I mean, yes, but there is no whimsy in losing your job either.
There is if you play it right.
And all I'm saying is, I'm defending this in the way of, I thought it was interesting to not just have the Disney, my mom died when I was very young. It's, my mom just died and we're still dealing with that and not quite sure how this new family unit works and we're trying to figure our lives out. And we had to grow up too fast, but we're still very much kids.
But I've seen this movie before.
Like where?
Oh, what movie? Like, there's so many kids' movies with the
I can't think of one that has
died.
I mean, yes, but it's usually it's not recent, and you don't usually see the dad actually dealing with it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
What are you talking about? Most of these movies, it's usually not recent, but he's still usually dealing with it as if it was recent.
I mean, a lot of films deal with death. Not a lot of them deal with reeling after a loss.
But they don't really reel that much. I mean, it seems like he's kind of already gotten over most of the serious grief.
I don't know. Then you have his song up in the basement where he's just like, I miss you, babe.
Yeah, which is just a weird song and it doesn't fit in this movie.
It feels like A Man Has Dreams, except they put it at the beginning.
Yeah, and also this is a movie where, like, almost immediately following that, there's kids getting sucked into a bathtub to swim in the ocean. Like, it doesn't work, in my opinion.
So they clean out their house and prepare to move out. Admiral Boom says goodbye, because Admiral Boom is a gentleman.
I love Admiral Boom.
I want a spin-off TV show with him.
I do really like Admiral Boom, though. He's probably the best part of this movie, because he still feels like the same exact character.
Like, I told you before that he was in it, and you were like, I really wish they wouldn't put him in it. Do you feel differently now?
No, I do feel differently. I don't feel like that it would have been better if he wasn't in it. I think that he's the only character that I feel like is the same character.
So they find the kite, and they see that the important documents, the shares, are in the kite, so they fly there, but he's like, I won't make it on time. And then Lin-Manuel Miranda is like, oh, we can fix that. And they all go their separate ways, and they have this big action set piece involving the Tower of Big Ben and pushing the clock back and making it finally on time with Admiral Boom's time.
Fucking, so Mary Poppins has Jack climb all the way up Big Ben with dangerous-ass little ladders, and then she just flies up later anyways.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't you just do that?
Want me to know my biggest issue with this film?
What?
Mary Poppins gets way too involved in the main plot. Like, in the main action of things.
Yeah, like, Mary Poppins doesn't let other people do stuff. She actually is directly involved with it.
Where in the first film, like, it would be really weird if Mary Poppins just walked Mr. Banks to being fired. Walked with him.
Yeah, she, like, walked with him there, and then she was like, hang on, I'll tell your boss this joke, and he'll laugh so hard he'll die.
Yeah. So they all save the day, but Colin Firth is like, this isn't enough. You guys are screwed. And then walks Dick Van Dyke as Mr. Dawes Jr.
It's cool to see him. I wish he was playing Bert. I know they couldn't have done that because it was only 20 years, and Bert probably would not be that old, but I don't know. I miss Bert.
But Jack does his job. He kind of talks to us. He sings to us at the beginning and end.
Yeah, but he's not... He's imitation Bert.
But he's doing a very good imitation. A very charming imitation.
But it's an imitation, nonetheless.
Yes. He's one of the better parts of this movie, though. Like, altogether.
Well, that's because he's almost Bert.
What is it? Diet Bert.
Diet Bert. And even Diet Bert is better than no Bert.
So, do you want to come and tell us what Mr. Dawes says when he comes out?
Oh my goodness.
He rewrites history a little bit there.
He's like, oh yeah, remember that 2 pence you were going to spend on the birds? It actually got invested, and now it's worth a lot after 20 years.
It's worth 20 grand.
Yeah, apparently it's worth 20 grand.
Enough to pay your house.
What sort of bank would have that high of a gain? Does that exist?
High interest. It just goes to show that not all capitalists are evil.
Well, I mean, the first one said the same thing. Except for the first one didn't have any evil capitalists. The first one just had ones that were a little bit too into it.
They were just they went to Capitalist Con. They cosplayed as money.
They're like, if this kid even comes close to giving me this money, I'm gonna just take it out of his hands.
I love money. Invest it wisely in the bank, safe and sound.
Well, apparently it's not safe if you get the wrong guy running the bank.
Right. Either way, the next day, everything's all good. They got their house back, and they go to the park, and they see an old woman, played by Angela Lansbury, selling balloons in a role that very obviously was written for Julie Andrews, but she turned it down. Which I get, because she didn't want to step on Emily Blunt's toes, and if you got two Mary Poppins in the frames, you kind of look at the good one.
Is Julie Andrews still alive?
Yeah, she's still alive. She's just an Aquaman.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm looking it up.
She's still very pretty.
How did Julie Andrews end up in Aquaman instead of Mary Poppins Returns?
Isn't that crazy?
I think she should have taken the role, to be honest, but whatever.
I get why she didn't, though, if that makes sense.
I get it, but... I mean, come on.
Because as soon as you see Julie Andrews, you're kind of... Your mindset in this world is kind of blown apart by, like, there's the real Mary Poppins. Which one's the real Mary Poppins?
Yeah, but we also have, the real Bert shows up.
Yeah, but he's playing Mr. Dawes, a character he played in the first one.
But he's dead. He's playing a character that was dead.
And...
They
all grab balloons and fly around in the sky, and I actually like this song. We'll talk about that later. But
Did Mr. Dawes make an appearance with the balloons?
I don't think so.
He should have. That would have been...
You know, when I first saw Mary Poppins, like when I was a kid, I always thought that Mr. Dawes Jr. was actually flying his father up on the kite, because you never see what kite he's flying, so I was assumed he was... For some reason, that was a connection I made. Like, that would have been a really funny gag.
Oh, because he was laughing and he was flying away?
Yeah, I thought that would have been funnier than him just dying. Where's your father? Oh, he's up there! And he's just attached to, like, the string laughing.
You know what I actually don't like at the end here?
What do you not like about the end of this film?
When the villain shows up and he takes a balloon and it falls and he can't fly.
Because of his chronic erectile dysfunction.
I think it speaks to the tonally how it's messed up. Like, in the first one, yes, the villain dies, technically. Well, the quote-unquote villain, you call him a villain, the antagonist. Dies, but he dies laughing, and he does fly, and he experiences magic and stuff.
Enjoy.
You know? Yeah, and I guess in this one, it's just perfectly fine that they have this character who is literally so irredeemable that he can't even join in on the fun.
Yeah. Angela Lansbury is charming to watch. Like, I'm so glad she's still working despite being 1,000 years old.
Jesus Christ, Jess.
What?
1,000 years old, oh my god.
She's been alive through, like, Hitchcock's films.
Jess, you don't ask a woman her age.
She is quite old and still quite wonderful and charming, and this song is so charming. The last scene, when with her and Mary Poppins, she's like, the grown-ups will forget it by morning.
I think this was my favorite part, though, when they all flew up into the sky. Except for that one nitpick that I had where I don't like that the villain exists.
My nitpick is suddenly at the end, like, as soon as Mr. Dawes Jr. shows up, they feel like, all right, we've held back from playing any of the themes up to this point. Let's just throw them all at you. Let's go fly a kite. Feed the bird. Bring them all out.
Come on.
Make you cry from nostalgia.
You think this was an original movie? No.
I will appreciate that they never said supercalifragilisticexpialidocious in the entire film. That would have been a little too far.
That one's too iconic and too specific that you can't do it.
Yes, I agree. Some shows have mid-show announcements. Can you imagine that? All right, so thank you guys. We're sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but we're here to chill at you.
We're here to shill a little light fantastic. Let's
shill
go.
Shill a little light fantastic with us. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We're all at Musicals with Cheese. We would also please keep reviewing us on iTunes. Get us up there on the charts. We're going to keep doing giveaways for you guys, so it's always beneficial for you to guys keep reviewing. We're also on Patreon at Musicals with Cheese. Please, if you got some free cents every now and then, throw them our way. It'll help us make better and more quality content, as well as more content.
We are on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals.
Yes.
We're personally on Twitter. I'm at Hey_Ductor, and Jess is at Jess McAnally.
Jesse McAnally.
Oh, Jesse McAnally, pardon me.
Our Instagram is Musicals with Cheese, and much like our Twitter, we have personal ones. I'm at Jesse McAnally, and Andrew is at Hey_Ductor. And we're email at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our title card was created by Jolene Casco. Her Instagram is Jolene Casco. Please give her some attention. She's great.
And we'll let you get back to the show.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll get you right back to it.
It won't be long. Sooner than you think you'll hear some bright new song. So hold on tight to those you love. And maybe soon from up above, you'll be blessed, so keep on looking high. While you're underneath the lovely London
The entire movie opens up with Underneath the Lovely London Sky as performed by Lin-Manuel Miranda. I think it's a good opening.
I think it is a good opening.
And it tricks you into thinking you're going to see something very akin to Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I like... On the initial opening, I thought he was Bert. I really did. I didn't know he was a different character. So I was like, oh, Bert is a lamplighter right now. That's neat. But it turns out it was just a different character entirely.
It just goes to show that Andrew honestly does not see race. I think it's a really charming thing that sets up location very well. And apparently they went through like 50 different variations of an opening number, and this was the first one they wrote. And then they just did a bunch of other ones, and they were like, oh, fuck it, just go back to the first one.
They wrote like a bunch of different ones, and they just fucking scrapped them all, or
yep.
What?
Because it's the first time you've seen Mary Poppins in the world that they live in, and you want to make sure it's good. And they scrapped all the other ideas and went back to their very first one.
It doesn't... I feel like it doesn't set up the tone... as well as Chim Chimney, but I feel like that would be a really tough one to match anyways, so...
But it does go into a really nice overture, and I really do like the overture. Like, the painted, like, ideas of what the film will lead us to.
I feel like the paintings are something that might have been in an earlier draft of the story or something, because they're never really brought up, I don't think.
I think it's just a tribute to the first one. With Bert and his chalk art.
Well, I think it's something to do with Michael Banks and his paintings, because he says he was an artist. I didn't think at the time. I thought it was just a tribute, but I feel like it was gonna be something that was brought up, and they never did it.
Yeah, I never got that impression.
When you first watch it, though, it's a tribute to the chalk art and all that.
And it's charming, and it made me feel like I was going to get a better film than I got.
I've been negative this whole time. I'm going to try to be more positive here, because I think Jess is about to go off on some rants. So.
I don't like this film that much. I give it, like, if I'm going to give away my rating, it's like a 4 out of 10.
I'd probably give it like a 6 or maybe a 7.
That's still too kind for me. It does a lot of things.
I mean, Mary Poppins is a 10 out of 10, so... Yeah.
See, my starting point for any film is 5. You can either lose points or gain points.
So you're saying that this one basically just lost 1 point?
Yep. It's not terrible, but it lost points.
Would you give Mary Poppins a 10?
Yes.
For everything's in disarray. These rooms were always full of magic. That's vanished since you went away.
All right, let's go into Ben Whishaw's song, A Conversation, very, very briefly.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just him trying to reconnect with his wife through, like, all the songs he sang. Ben Whishaw is not a singer, but it is, like, a little emotional moment when he's alone and just being like, I can't believe this all has happened to me.
I don't like it. I know I said I was going to try to be positive, but I actually don't like this song.
I think it works. I think it's very charming, but it feels like it's a lot of pathos very early on, where at this point in the first film, we were dancing around about sister suffragette.
Yeah, like, this is... It's way, way too, like, somber for the first song that we really hear after the after we're actually introduced to the main characters. It just doesn't... I don't think it works. But I've already said that I don't even like this whole, like, aspect of the plot where there's the dead wife anyways. And I feel like the movie would work better without that, but...
I feel like this show, this film, rights a few wrongs of the first film, or at least in Rob Marshall, the director's mind. I mean, not in my mind.
What's that?
In this film, only Mary Poppins and all the fantastical people plus Jack the Lamplighter are the ones that sing until the very end. And this is the anomaly in it. Like, in the original, like, the dad sang, the mom sang, everyone sang because it was just a musical. And in this one, it's mostly just the fantasy characters, except for this pretty much a cappella song in the attic.
Which is barely even sung.
Yes. And I'm trying to figure out if that was, like, an intentional choice, or if it's just, like, was there songs for Jane and Michael to begin with, or not? Or did we just not need to set them up?
Yeah, it's odd, especially when you have this pretty serious subject matter, and then you're not going to elaborate on that with songs, which is basically what a musical is for.
Right.
Like, if you have these, like, deeper emotions, you should probably have more songs about it, but instead they have, like the original Mary Poppins, they have more just fun songs that are, like, dance numbers and stuff, which is what I wanted. So this song is like, why is this here?
I think it should have been a Jane and Michael song where they connect as siblings. Where did the magic go kind of conversation? Like, I think that could have worked.
I feel like it might have worked better if it was just, like, he got divorced or something like that. The fact that his wife is dead is just so fucking... It's just such a buzzkill. for a movie that I went into and I'm like, I'm gonna have a fun time and there's gonna be dancing and singing and... And it's like, my wife died. My wife died. It's like, okay, cool. That's okay.
Mary Poppins returns. _ My wife died.
I always wish that they just didn't have this because it's pretty much just to set up the plot. It's like, oh, his wife needed to die so that there is this ticking clock, like, I'm going to lose the house thing. Because you could have had this story without that aspect of it.
One of my favorite parts of the original Mary Poppins was the fact that both parents are alive.
Yeah. And they're not even, like, that bad of parents, really. Like, I mean, obviously the dad is strict. The dad is strict and distracted, but he's not, like
abusive.
I'm not going to, like, beat my wife kind of fucking...
I mean, he is, like, the woman belongs in her place.
Yeah, which isn't great, but obviously it's not, like... It's not like worst parent ever kind of thing.
Some people like to splash and play. Can you imagine that? And take a seaside holiday. Can you imagine that? Too much glee leaves rings around the
brain. All right, then we move into Mary Poppins' first song, Can You Imagine That?
Yeah, which is a great song to follow the one we just had.
I'm going to let you talk about what you think.
This is the type of song that I wanted in here. It's more of a fun kind of a set piece thing. I think it's too early for them to be going on this really over-the-top, world-changing adventure.
I just feel like everything they do after that, like, visually just won't live up to it.
Well, they try to have everything be, like, that over-the-top. But... I think, it's just too early. Like, at this point in the last one, it was you know, them cleaning the room, which had some cool practical, like, type effects, like reversing footage and shit, I think. But, like, it wasn't like, oh, they're in a literally a different world floating around.
And I also don't like the lyrics much.
I didn't listen to it multiple times, so I didn't really catch too
much
on the lyrics.
Some people like to splash and play. Can you imagine that?
Oh.
That just
Yeah, that's a little cringe.
Like, a lot of the lyrics in this song specifically make me cringe. But I like the melody, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which they use as Mary Poppins' theme throughout the entire film. And I'm like, oh, that works as an instrumental, but I hate the words that you have put to it.
They could have just put different words to it. It probably would have worked fine.
It probably would have worked better for me personally. I just didn't much care for the lyrics here.
I'm going to stay positive, though, and I'm going to say the song is okay.
I mean, I don't hate the song, but the lyrics kill it for me. Like, I'm not a fan of the lyrics.
It's definitely not nearly as good as, like, Spoonful of Sugar.
But it's identical. It's, like, almost identical in cadence as well.
It's identical in, like, tone and where it is and how it's used and everything like that, too. But it's just not as good.
Yep, that's fair. All right.
But I think that sums up this whole fucking movie, though. You know, like, it's the same, but not as good. Loves the very top drawable, always uncordable,
Royal Dalton Music Hall. The Royal Dalton Music Hall. I've got a very specific issue with this song, and it is 100% a nitpick and just Jesse complaining.
And what's that? What do you got?
It's literally just the way Emily Blunt delivers the line, the, like, title song.
Okay.
She's like,
what's wrong with it?
She's like, it's a way that Julie Andrews is Mary Poppins, and I would never say this. Like, you can hear this song, and it's a fine song.
Oh, is it the way that she does, like, the blues growl?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. Music Hall!
That actually stuck out to me as well. When I was watching it, I was like, why? What's the blues growl? That's not something that would have been in there before.
And that was a red flag for what comes up afterwards. It doesn't feel natural to the character. It feels like Emily Blunt was just having fun in the recording studio, and they're like, oh, that's, like, charming. Let's put it in there.
That's so cool.
Oh my god, she's being so quirky.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I didn't like it either.
And it stands out.
It doesn't feel like Mary Poppins.
And I know that's, like, a really hipstery thing to say. It just doesn't feel... It's ruining the integrity of Mary Poppins, but it feels that way to me.
Look, man, there's certain things that exist that are just whimsical and genuine, and you can't fuck with them, okay? And those things are Mary Poppins, the Muppets, and there isn't any others. It's just those two. So open it up and take a look, cause under the covers one discovers that the king may be a crook. Chapter titles are like signs, and if you read between the lines, you'll find your first impression was mistook.
Alright, let's move on to another song that I've got complaints about. A cover is not the book.
Is it cause they rap?
No, I like that part, actually. That felt very Mary Poppins to me.
Really? It didn't to me, but okay.
Like, it was just patter... like, spoken patter. It's fine. It's in the first one.
When you have patter, there's, like, instrumentation that goes with it. Rap has different instrumentation.
There was no instrumentation to his in the first.
Exactly.
And the first.
Which makes it spoken words.
In the first film, Bert was just like, to, like, nothing.
Yeah, in rap, there's never nothing. Come on.
And in this one, he was basically doing the same thing.
I don't know.
You're just wrong. This one I'm going to fight you on. You're wrong. This is fine.
I'm going to fight you as well, but I'm not actually complaining about it because I thought the song was fine and I don't actually care. But I just know that was like a controversial thing, like, oh, they rapped or something. So I wanted to bring it up.
No. See, mine is another Mary Poppins thing.
Like, I don't think the rap was bad, but I am going to argue that it is different than a patter. Rap has a different tone to it. It is a different feel.
It fit the tone. It was fine.
I'm not saying it didn't fit the tone. I'm just saying that it was a rap.
Okay, fine. It was a rap in the first one too.
You can't listen. No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't.
God
though.
Damn it! We're not fighting about this.
It wasn't a rap in the first one. It really wasn't. I don't know. Fucking
tell us in the comments whether or not it was a rap in the first one.
Rap has a different tone to it, a different tonality.
You're gonna make me keep all this shit in now.
I'm not complaining about it, by the way. I'm not saying that it's bad because it's a rap. I'm just saying that it was a rap, in my opinion, and the other one was not.
All right. You're ready for my stupid nitpicks in the song?
Yeah, sure, go for it. What do you got?
I hate her hairstyle when she comes out. I hate that little bop haircut she has.
Yes, I agree.
I hate the fact that Mary Poppins would never talk in a Cockney accent, even as a joke.
She's practically perfect in every way. There's no way she would do that.
She would not even as like, I cover it, not the buck, the dog, but dog. Like, she would not do that. She is way too high class for that.
Yes, I agree as well. That's also why she wouldn't do the haircut.
Mm-hmm. And she would not sexualize her actions the way that they do in this song number with the dancing. She, like, humps at one point. She, like, humps the air, and I'm like, what am I watching?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
And I was like, what? That's not Mary Poppins. Do not sexualize Mary Poppins.
Jess, that right-wing article actually said that she is an asexual being in this, so you're wrong.
Like, it bothered me very highly that, like, the song is even about being naked at one point. Like, just being naked and not judging nudity by the book. It's a strangely sexual song.
It's something that you don't have Mary Poppins do.
Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
If Bert was singing this song, it would have been fine and goofy, but this is no supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is what I'm saying.
It does feel wrong to have Mary Poppins doing that.
Like, Mary Poppins is never naked.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Did you notice she never actually, another thing, did you notice Mary Poppins never used her, her portable makeup thing?
Yeah, I did. No, like her blush thing?
She never used that.
She used her umbrella a lot. He was borderline
shady.
Yeah,
they really liked the talking umbrella that I think was only in the first movie one time at the very end.
Yep.
Maybe I'm wrong about that?
Yep, you're right.
They really liked that, but they didn't use her blush that she used several times in the first movie. She used it at the very beginning. That's the first thing we see her do. And then she continues to use it. Like, there's one part where there's, like, a joke where she's covered in soot, and then she, like, smudges it even more with it.
Like, that's cute. Like, there's nothing that cute in this film.
It's like they replaced Mary Poppins with someone else.
What? And also, huge nitpick, Mary Poppins should always be a soprano.
Well, I think I do agree with that.
Like, she sounds wrong when she's talking down like this. Like, the color is not the book, hold on.
Explains the blues growl a little bit, though.
Like that now, far beneath the snow, hiding in the place where the lost things.
Let's talk about the next song, The Place Where Lost Things Go.
The Place Where Lost Things Go.
I don't like the song. It's just kind of boring. Not that it's
bad.
This
is another song about the dead parents.
Yeah. I feel like when they focus on the plot, this is when the movie and the music take a turn toward the less interesting.
It's such a boring plot. It's just a fucking...
It's generic 90s plot. It feels like this was written in 1993.
It's like, we gotta get the thing.
We gotta get the Turbo Man or else my kid won't love me. I'm not... It's boring,
it's okay.
Repetitive. It's fine. I just didn't feel anything from it.
But I feel like a huge amount of this movie can be just described as it's fine.
Yeah. Like, same with the next song with Meryl Streep, Turning Turtle.
Fast is slow, low is high, stop is go, and that is why every second Wednesday is a hurdle. From 8 to 9, all is well, then I roll over on my shell and all, because the world is...
I don't like this particular scene because I think it's the most pointless scene in the whole movie that has literally no plot relevance. And in this movie, the plot actually matters a lot more.
It fits in the place that was surprisingly plot relevant of I Love to Laugh.
So, it's like, you're gonna replace a song that had plot relevance in a movie where there wasn't actually that much plot. You're gonna replace that with a song with absolutely no plot relevance in a movie where the plot is, like, the main focus.
And not that Meryl Streep does badly. She sings it well, and the accent is goofy and fits whatever world they're trying to. We already mentioned our plot issues with it. It's just kind of dull. It's okay.
It's fine. It's passable. In a better movie, it might be nice, a nice, like, kind of side thing, but...
Yeah. Triple O Light, fantastic. Same thing. Step in Time.
It's fine.
But I like this better than Step in Time.
Well, I mean, I think I've already said song-wise, I think it is better.
Mm-hmm.
But the dance number, I think the Step in Time is better. And I feel like in this sequence, the dancing is the focus, so I still like Step in Time better for that.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the next one.
Now my heart is so light that I think I just might start feeding the birds and then go fly a kite with your head in a cloud. Only laughter's allowed and there's nowhere to go but up.
Nowhere to Go But Up is my favorite song in the entire film.
Mine too. It actually has a Mary Poppins feel, I think, is the main thing.
And you can leave the theater humming it, and Angela Lansbury is just such a charming presence that you're just, like, overjoyed to hear her sing.
It has characters that aren't Mary Poppins singing as well.
Mm-hmm. And the visuals live up to the song, if that makes sense. It's the first time where the visuals feel like it coincide with the song, whereas with Can You Imagine That? Like, Emily Blunt has a very soft, deep voice. And it sounds really cool, especially like in Into the Woods, but it doesn't live up to the fantastical visions we have. Whereas this like giant chorus number feels like it matches a bunch of people flying through the air.
Yeah, I like this one. But I mean, I feel like you have a lot more complaints on the songs than I do, but I think really both of us feel the same way in that it's just, this movie is just really average.
It's average, and I wanted it to be better. I really did. I wanted
No,
this
honestly,
to be good.
I hadn't watched Mary Poppins, the first one, in a long time, and I went back and watched it, and I was like, wow, that was actually really fucking good. You know, I was kind of expecting it to be like, it's all right, but it's kind of kiddie or, you know, whatever. It's not as good as I remember, but It's actually really fucking good. I really liked it. And I was like, man, I can't wait for the second one. I hope it is. It lives up to this. And it's just a kind of a letdown.
Mm-hmm. And I was kind of texting you and you're like, I didn't like it.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's fine. It's just, I can't ever imagine thinking to myself like, oh, I want to watch Mary Poppins. Do I want to watch the first one or the second one? You know, like, thinking about it, it's like, no, I'm going to watch the first one literally every single time.
I might turn on Nowhere to Go But Up, like, on YouTube every now and then.
Yeah, but, like, would you ever be like, hey, guys, let's have a Mary Poppins marathon and watch both of them? It's like, no, if you're going to watch it, you're going to watch the first one, and then you're going to go to bed.
So, Andrew, what is your overall thoughts on Mary Poppins Returns and your cheese rating?
My overall thoughts, I feel like I've already given those pretty much, but it's average. You know, it's just painfully average. With this particular movie, I know average is not like a bad thing necessarily, but because it's a follow-up to a movie that is so good, I kind of just wish they didn't make it.
I agree with you.
You know,
I wish this film didn't exist.
Yeah, it's like, the first one is just so fucking perfect. It's like, why did you make this one? You know, you obviously didn't have anything to add. You didn't have anything to say. You couldn't recreate the magic of the first one. Why is it here? Why did you do it?
Well, if I can say one thing positive about making Mary Poppins Returns... is now whenever I watch the first one, I will see Michael as a character and think, hey, he grows up, has three kids, and his wife dies, but he still has a fulfilled life. Instead of what I used to think was, that little boy grew up to die of syphilis.
Why'd you think that?
Because the actor grew up to die of syphilis.
I mean, in my head, those kids never grew up, okay?
Little girl was in the new movie. She was in Mary Poppins Returns somewhere. She had a cameo.
Well, all I'm saying is Mary Poppins is like, it's such a magical movie that I don't really think about that. Like, when I finished watching Mary Poppins, I never thought to myself, like, oh, man, I wonder what happens when they grow up. It's like, No, it just, it ends, it's a bookend, and the book closes, and you put it back on the shelf.
Yep, and unfortunately, they couldn't just leave it up on the shelf. They had to pull it out of the Disney vault.
They had to pull it out, and they took the back cover, and they started drawing on it.
They took the Crayolas and just started drawing shit.
And they're like, ah, that's worthy, I think.
Balloons!
And, you know, I feel like people are going to get the impression that I hated this, or that you hated this. And I'm not sure if you hated it, but I didn't hate it. I didn't like it. And as a successor to something that is so great, it's like, I just, not liking it is enough that I would rather not have seen it.
I came out of it at first just hating it. Then as time passed by and I listened to the soundtrack again and again and again, it's grown on me, but I still don't like it. Because I really didn't want to be up here just talking shit. I did not want to be the guy that's just being an asshole on the internet. You got enough of those.
Yeah. And we goof on it, but we goof on everything, so.
Mm-hmm. Even the stuff we love, we goof on, but I just didn't love this movie. Sorry, guys.
Don't really know what to give it as a cheese rating. You know, I mean, it's cheesy, but it's so bland.
Why don't you just give it, like, wax cheese? Like, it's a good imitation of cheese, but it's not quite that. It's not really cheese.
I think I'm going to give it, ironically, American cheese, because that, what I think bland cheese, that's like, you know, you put that in a grilled cheese, but you wouldn't eat it, you know?
Like Kraft Singles.
Yeah, like a Kraft Single or something like that. It's like, it's cheese, and it doesn't taste bad, but, like, am I going to open it up and eat it? Probably not.
Like, you have to mix other stuff with it.
Yeah, and sadly, we don't have anything to mix this with, so.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Leave us a review. We're still going to offer contests very soon for iTunes reviews, so keep reviewing. You could still be a winner. Please, we now have a Patreon. Donate a couple dollars if you have some free dimes in your life so that we can stop living on the street recording this podcast. Follow us on Twitters at Cheesy Musical, and personally, Andrew is at Hey_Doctor, and I'm at Jesse McAnally. Our Instagram is Musicals with Cheese, and our personal Instagrams are Jesse McAnally and Hey_Doctor. Our email is musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com, and our title card artist is Jolene Casco. Follow her on Instagram at Jolene Casco. Andrew, thank you for sitting with us and watching Mary Poppins Returns. I hope you've enjoyed it, at least had a good time talking with me.
You know what? I can't say I didn't have a good time, because, I mean, there's been a lot worse things you've had me sit through, so.
Like what? What's the worst thing I've had you sit through?
Probably Rent. Yeah. Still, I think I still Rent, and, I'm sure this is spoils, but we're probably gonna be watching that again soon, so. Okay. Yeah, Jess just has his fun. Well, you gotta watch it too, Jess, so.
I actually have to watch it twice, because I'm seeing it live on January 8th. And then, like, because I got free tickets, and you can't just not go to a thing you're giving free tickets to.
If it's Rent, I feel like you can, but okay.
I'm sure the actors are very talented, and they'll sing the parts very well.
Yeah, but does that matter?
We'll find out.
Is it going to make the show good, Jess? Mm. Is it going to bring your dad back? I don't think so.
But next week, we actually have a very special guest, and you're going to love it. And we're talking about something kooky crazy, and you're going to love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So until next time, thank you for listening. I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And this was Musicals with Cheese.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.